accomplishment. VOA won the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on today's program, I report on the increased use of the abortion pill. Ana Mateo brings us words and their stories on the phrase "the root of the problem." Dan Friedel and Jill Robbins have this weekend's Higher Education Report on students' struggles with math after the pandemic. Gregory Stockel reports on coral reefs in Cuba. And Faith Perlow has a story on how people are changing what they wear to work. But first, a group that supports abortion rights says that drugs are used to carry out more than half of the abortions in America, rather than operations. The Guttmacher Institute, a nonprofit research group, said earlier this year that the percentage has been increasing yearly. The drugs are taken in the form of pills to medically end pregnancies. Recent federal regulations permit women who live in states where abortion is restricted to receive abortion pills across state lines. One woman from the state of South Dakota told the Associated Press she had to take two trips across state lines to get abortion pills last year. The woman did not want to release her name. She said the pills permitted her to end an unexpected and high-risk pregnancy. An opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court leaked this week suggested that it would permit individual states to ban abortion. And anti-abortion activists and politicians say cross-border trips, online doctor's visits, and mail delivery pills are what they will try to stop next. Medication abortion will be where access to abortion is decided, said Mary Ziegler. She is a professor at Florida State University College of Law. Ziegler specializes in reproductive rights. That's going to be the battleground that decides how enforceable abortion bans are. Use of abortion pills has been rising in the U.S. since 2000. That year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, approved mifepristone. It is the main drug used in medication abortions. The FDA removed a requirement that women receive abortion pills in person during the COVID-19 pandemic last year. Mail delivery is also now permitted across the country. Those changes have helped create online services that offer information on getting abortion pills and appointments to get a prescription. The unidentified woman in South Dakota first found that the state's only abortion clinic could not accept her in time for a medication abortion. She was able to find an online service that advised her to drive to Minnesota for a phone call with a doctor. A week later, she went back to Minnesota for the pills. South Dakota is among several states in which Republican lawmakers and leaders have moved to place restrictions on abortion pills in recent months. Other states include Texas, Kentucky, Arkansas, Ohio, Tennessee, and Oklahoma. The AP reports that 19 states require a medical professional to be physically present when abortion pills are given to a patient. Besides crossing state lines, women can also go to internationally based online pharmacies, said Greer Donnelly. She is a professor at the University of Pittsburgh Law School. some women are also having pills sent through states without restrictions. It's going to be much harder for states to control abortion access, Donnelly said. The question is, how is it going to be enforced? Sue Leibel is with the Susan B. Anthony List, an organization opposed to abortion. She said it is an issue that is gaining in importance to Republican state lawmakers. This is a new frontier, and states are grappling with enforcement mechanisms, she said. Abortion opponents say they do not want to bring legal action against women who seek abortions. Instead, Leibel suggested the next target for state enforcement should be the pharmacies, organizations, and clinics that provide the abortion pills. She also said abortion rights opponents should place importance on electing a presidential candidate who could work to change the FDA's policy.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. Today, we talk about an important part of every plant, the roots. The roots of most plants grow below the ground. There, they have some very important jobs. The roots anchor the plant. They secure it in the ground. Roots also take in water and minerals to feed the plant. And in many plants, the roots store food and nutrients. So roots are the foundation of the plant, the supporting structures. And that gives us our first expression, to put roots down. When you put roots down, you make a place your home by creating connections. You get a job and maybe buy a house. You also make friends and join activities. You might start a family. As your children start school, your ties to the school and other parents are also roots. All these things connect you to a place. Each connection makes it harder for you to leave. Just like the roots of a plant, they ground you. If you want to move a plant, you must be careful not to disturb the roots too much. If you do, you could kill the plant. And that brings us to another way we use the word root. The root can also be the start or cause of something. For example, I could say that my love of mystery stories is rooted in my childhood full of Agatha Christie books. Now, problems have roots too. So people could say that a small town's problems are rooted in a lack of good jobs. That suggests our next expression. Get to the root of the problem. When we get to the root of a problem, we get to the cause of it. You can also strike at the root of a problem if you are looking for a way to solve it. Sometimes we use the verb dig to go with some root expressions. As we said, roots are underground. You must dig to reach them. So we could say, A lack of jobs is just one issue. To get to the root of the city's larger problem, we must dig deeper. Here's an example.
I just heard that the city council is going to add more money to this year's school budget.
That's good news, but I'm not sure more money is going to fix high truancy rates and poor classroom behavior.
Well, it can't hurt.
True, but to really help students, we need to get to the root of the education problem.
And what do you think the root of the problem is?
I think the roots to that problem are vast and complex.
Now for our final expression. There is a common saying in English that involves roots. You may hear people say that money is the root of all evil. That expression comes from the Bible. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. While it may not be the root of all evil, I'm sure that greed has caused quite a few problems. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Andrea Hernandez is a student at the University of Texas. As a high school student in Dallas, she studied math a lot and was proud of her skill in the subject. But when schools around the U.S. closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020, students started learning by video link and on computers. Hernandez found it hard to make progress. By then, she was studying in a class called pre-calculus. After more than 1 year of learning by video link, she had to take a calculus test before starting school at the University of Texas. She did not do well. As a result, she had to start her college education in a lower-level math class. Hernandez got a top grade of A, but she told the Hechinger Report that she lost some belief in her math ability. Now she looks at calculus questions and thinks, "I don't understand anything. I'll just sit there," she said, kind of lost. College professors around the country are saying there are many students like Hernandez. These students had trouble learning when the pandemic changed the way they experienced school. After 2 years, many students said they are less prepared for college than they hoped to be. Some say they have forgotten how to be students. Uri Treisman is Hernandez's professor at the University of Texas. He told Hechinger Report that his students are making basic mistakes that he would not expect. About 25% did not pass his class in the autumn of 2021. Usually, he said, 5% fail the class. Treisman said it was hard to see so many students have problems. "Their failure is my failure," he said. He is also worried about his students whose families do not make a lot of money. They might not have the same ability to get extra help. The professor said it is normal for students to come to the university with different skill levels, but they are usually able to catch up. During the last 2 years, it has been harder because students are distracted in different ways than in the past.
For example, Hernandez's grandfather, who lived in Mexico, died of COVID-19. She learned about it in the middle of her computer math class. It became hard for her to think about school when family members were sick and others had financial problems. Kristen Patterson is an associate professor of genetics at the University of Texas. She said in past years, only 2 to 4% of students do not get through her class. But last year, about 20% did not pass. Patterson said, the university does not fully understand how the pandemic changed learning for students when they were in high school. But it is slowly getting more information. When students are able to work with a teacher in the classroom, she said, the teacher can judge a student's progress. When they are at home, that information is limited. In addition, some high schools permitted students to move on in their studies, even with poor grades. When students came back to school, some did not have to take standardized tests that permitted teachers to find out how much they had learned. In 2021, for example, some states asked the U.S. Department of Education for permission to change or cancel the tests.
Patterson at the University of Texas said some students did not understand the difference between the large meetings and small group discussions that form her class. Ed Venet said students' lack of preparation will continue. He works at an education research company called EAB. He said, colleges must understand that a large number of incoming students have unfinished learning from high school. For example, at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, the number of students having trouble with math classes is higher than in the past. The university added classes to help students learn study skills and ways to plan their time. Many college officials report that the students they accept do not have lower grades than usual, but many have not mastered the subjects as well as students in past years. Over the last 2 years, the U.S. government has made billions of dollars of aid available for school systems across the country. Schools are expected to find out why students are having problems learning.
In Boston, Lorena Rivera has 2 daughters who had trouble with math in the last 2 years. Her daughters would often start their work and then stop. There was a lot of giving up. It was hard, she said. Early reports have been gathered from some of the biggest school districts in the country. They suggest that student groups which already faced problems, including Black, Hispanic, and poor students, appear to be behind in greater numbers. But Treisman said lowering standards is not the answer. Sometimes he thinks he could make his classes easier. The big risk, he said, is that I give them a good grade and they're not prepared for what comes next. He commented that students could graduate from college and be unprepared for their jobs. Venet said he worries that students who come from poor families or who are not white or who are the first in their families to go to college will have problems. This is a rich gets richer situation and a poor stays poor situation, Venet said. He said that would reverse what those like him have been trying to do for 20 years.
Hisela Field studies the data that comes from student tests in a large school district near Miami, Florida. She said, 1 year will not be enough to correct all the problems. The bottom line, she said, is that we have such a loss that it will take some time. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
A small group of Cuban dive instructors have started a project to grow corals and replant them. The divers hope to restore part of Cuba's barrier reef, and they are working with limited financial support and using materials recovered from the coast. Luis Muño is one of the project's leaders. The 44-year-old fisherman grew up on Cuba's north coast. He said he saw his beloved reefs outside the mouth of Matanzas Harbor slowly weaken and the number of fish lessen over the years. Muño told Reuters, "It's incredible the loss of coral in the past 30 years." He added, "Our dream is to repopulate again the parts of the barrier reef that have lost their corals." To make that happen, Muño worked with other dive instructors and neighborhood school children, with support from Cuba's National Aquarium and the Cuban environmental program Ecovalor. They began collecting pieces of coral spread across the ocean floor after large storms 3 years ago. The pieces were then hung on branches of underwater trees made from old plastic pipes and supported by fishing lines recovered from the coast. Muño said the pieces grow quickly. They are then replanted on the coral reef, attached by nails driven into the rock. In a year, most survive and grow enough to repopulate part of the barrier reef between 60 to 80 meters in length, he said. "It's a project that takes time," said co-worker Michel Soto. He said the project has done better than expectations, even with little financial support and limited equipment in Cuba. He commented, "Everything is difficult, but we keep pushing ahead, and we are making progress." Like many coral reefs around the world, the ones in Cuba are threatened by changing water temperatures, invasive plants and animals, pollution, and overfishing. The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, says the world has already lost 30 to 50% of its coral reefs. Karine Guiavic is a French diver who just visited Cuba for the first time. She said the reef looked better than others she had seen on dives elsewhere in the world, including in Africa. "The coral needs to be protected," she said, after two dives on a recent trip to nearby Baradero. She said, "It's good to see that in Cuba, they take care of what they have and that it is still not too affected by too much tourism." Muño said a healthy reef and a happy tourist are his real reward. "We do this out of love for the reef," Muño added. I'm Gregory Stockel.
As Americans slowly return to the office, they are rethinking their clothing choices at work. After 2 years of working from home in exercise clothes, many people now want to be comfortable while looking professional in the office. Some people are experimenting with new looks, and companies are trying to keep up with the demand for business comfort clothing. Kay Martin Pence works for a drug company in Indianapolis. The 58-year-old used to wear structured business clothes like dress pants and blazers and high-heel shoes to work before the pandemic. Now she wears comfortable clothes, including stylish jeans and flowing shirts, along with lower heel shoes. Being comfortable is more important than being super structured, said Martin Pence. She added that she will never wear dress pants to the office again. Adam Galinsky is a social psychologist at Columbia Business School. He studies the connection between what people wear and how they think. Galinsky said that people will knowingly think about what they will wear to the office. They may compare themselves to others and think about the situation they are in. He said that back-to-work clothes are still a social experiment, and the decision of what to wear could go either way. My guess is that it will go more casual, but maybe it doesn't, Galinsky said. Clothing companies are also seeing the changing demand. The market research NPD Group reported that wire-free bras, a type of women's support wear, are more than 50% of the total non-sports bra market in the U.S. This is a big change from prior years. The most common kind of shoe for the workplace is sneakers. And even though sales of dress shoes have increased slightly, sales are still 34% lower than in 2019. The increase is likely to come from more social gatherings and not workplaces. Rent the Runway, a rental clothing company, said that rentals of blazers are 2 times higher than last year because people are returning to work. But people are choosing more colorful and lightweight clothes. Traditional business wear rentals are still down by about 50% compared to pre-pandemic rentals. For men, there is an increase in sports pants for office wear, the personal shopping company Stitch Fix said. From January to March of 2022, money from sales of those styles increased 3 times. There is a high demand for comfortable shirts and pull-on pants. Now, there are more pants with stretchy waistbands on the Stitch Fix website than buttons or zippers. As more workers want to feel comfortable in their work clothes, some are excited to dress up again. One such worker is 42-year-old Emily Kirchner of Stevensville, Michigan. She said she is spending money on new clothes that include blue jeans, shirts, and even blazers. As a mother of a young child, she wants to feel her best when she leaves the house. It's kind of fun to dress up, Kirchner said. It's kind of like that back-to-school feeling. I'm Faith Perlow.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.